Gary. Overstated for sure, but always nice to hear nice things like that. I am no longer acting national program leader. As of last Monday, a week ago Monday, Dr. Teferi Tsegaye arrived at Beltsville and took office, and he's our new national program leader for water resources, and I'm continuing to work with him to mentor him because he's coming from outside USDA. Has a lot to learn about the program, but a very effective communicator, and we look forward to having really good leadership in the water program for many years to come. I've got a title here that I'm not sure I can quite live up to. Of course, you do these titles months in advance, but I'm going to go through and I'm going to try to address crop, soil, and water sciences. But I want to start off talking about some elements of the recent G20 agricultural ministers get-together. This is a draft, and this is a partial list from a draft that will come out in January of what we can call action items. It includes improving data and information for sustainable water management. We're talking about surveys, we're talking about analyses of water resources in key watersheds. We're talking about detecting risks before they happen so that we can act upon them. And we're talking about big data and data management, both in the large sense and for the research side, but also data management on the production side. How do you take data that's being sensed? We have data in the field that's being sensed hundreds of times a day of many different properties. And how do we develop decision support systems that take those data and provide something to a producer that the producer can use, because producers can't use data. Data are useless to a producer. What a producer needs is a decision support, a decision that he can act on, or he can say that doesn't quite make sense. Another one is increased support for research and development on agriculture and water, notably for water-efficient production methods and technologies. And I think a lot of us are working on these sorts of things, but the ministers would in particular like to involve information technologies in these research efforts. And this goes back to the first element. How do you take all those data and make something useful out of them? The third one is supporting exchange of research outcomes, technologies, and knowledge on a voluntary basis. That's what we're all about as a community. That's what we're all about as the Agronomy Society and the Tri-Societies. So I think everybody in this room and everybody at this meeting is involved in that voluntary exchange of research outcomes. And the fourth one is increasing awareness and initial and further training, making sure that the public and our scientists are aware of the nature of the problems, aware of what is being done and what might be done in the future to solve problems, and being adequately trained to be able to create solutions to problems in the future. And again, this is what our society is about. Basically, we self-train with each other every year when we get together. We self-train with each other every time we publish a paper and present our results. When we go to proceedings, when we go to a technical meeting in some other society or at a producer event, we're training the people we're working with, and we're training ourselves because we're listening to the stakeholder feedback. So these are things that I think, as they come out, we can fully support. I want to talk a little bit about USDA and the China Ministry of Science and Technology and the cooperative protocol that we have had since 2003, I believe. There was a meeting this year in China. between the Ministry of Science and Technology and USDA Undersecretary Wotecki. And we talked about that protocol and about renewing it. And in August, that protocol was signed and renewed. So that's going to be an ongoing program the USDA undertakes with several universities in China, including those represented by people in the room today. This has established already a robust exchange of scientists and technical information. Over 400 ARS scientists since 2009 have visited China and studied and worked there for various periods of time. And ARS labs are hosting researchers and postdoctoral students from China to work in various scientific disciplines. And this isn't just USDA. A lot of American universities are also involved in these exchanges. One I went to last year involved Kansas State University and some ARS people. I want to talk a little bit about natural resource management under the USDA China MOST protocol. For soil quality and conservation, some examples of things that are going on. At Beijing Normal University is the development of robotics for collecting wind erosion data, working with ARS labs in Kansas and Fort Collins and also in Texas at Lubbock. The Lanzhou Desert Research Institute working on tracer techniques for studying sediment sources, as erosion is a constant problem in the U.S. and in China as well, so there's cooperation going on there. Northwest Agriculture and Forest University studying new soil loss measurement methods applied to wind erosion in places in China like Inner Mongolia and Northwest China where it's arid and semi-arid and a lot of wind erosion occurs. Studies in the black soil region of Northeast China, soil degradation and modeling of that, and a workshop last year, 2015, on quantifying those soil erosion processes. In water quality and conservation, we've had work on research collaboration to further develop the ARS root zone water quality model between Fort Collins and Northwest Ag and Forest University, and a cooperative project to study and apply key techniques for improving crop water use efficiency in arid lands through deficit irrigation, controlling deficit irrigation so that you don't under-irrigate a crop and lose a lot of potential yield, but that you don't also don't fully irrigate it and get into some unproductive water applications. There's also research collaboration on efficiency of using steel slags to remove phosphorus in drainage areas. This is a big topic of research in the U.S. as well, so there's a lot of cooperation between China and the U.S. on using some of these industrial byproducts to tie up phosphorus and keep phosphorus from going into waterways and into lakes and oceans where we can get toxic algal blooms and hypoxic events occurring because of eutrophic conditions. Institute of Mountain Hazards Environment is working on soil erodibility and gully erosion processes, and Sichuan Natural Resource Science Academy is working on grassland restoration in the Tibetan Plateau. So these are just some items of things that are occurring in U.S. Sino-U.S. cooperation. Last October of 2015, we had 16 experts from both China and the U.S., from both universities and ARS from the U.S., attending this Irrigation in Action workshop on technology for efficient water use in agriculture. And this worked on correlation of crop yields and quality with the kind of irrigation method that was being used. And we know that different irrigation application methods can result in different efficiencies and different qualities of the products that come out of crop production. We also talked about fertigation and subsurface drip irrigation design and evaluation, and went up to Qifeng in Inner Mongolia and visited a huge drip irrigation manufacturing facility that's turning out tens of thousands of feet of drip tape for burgeoning subsurface drip irrigation scheme in that part of China. And this August, eight experts from China and the U.S. presented work in the Water Saving Technologies Irrigation Workshop in Wuhan, where we have at least one person in the audience who introduced me to some colleagues over there. So I appreciate that. We've had other workshops this year, a SWAT conference, soil water assessment tool conference in China with 160 participants, the third international conference on hydropedology that Henry Lin helped organize in Beijing, and last year we had another conference in Yangling with Northwest Ag and Forest University. Other workshops, conferences, and visits, there's been a number of them. American Society of Agricultural and Biological Engineers and the Irrigation Association. We had a lot of Chinese visitors last year for that big symposium that was the mid-decennial irrigation symposium in the U.S. We had a very strong contingent from China come for that. We were participating in the big data meeting at Lincoln this year, which was sponsored by the Water for Food Global Alliance, or the Water for Food Institute, rather. And November last year, had a visit with Valmont Industries from a Chinese scientist from Northwest Ag and Forest University to begin the discussion about using variable rate irrigation, center pivots in China. And we were discussing informally before we got started today about how larger farm operations are beginning to take hold in some parts of China, especially Western China, where we have land that's newly coming into production. And some of these technologies can be very useful. Some Chinese experts are doing joint water-saving technology research in the U.S. on mid to long-term sabbaticals and scientific visits. An example is Dr. Wenting Han, who's working at the University of Nebraska and also collaborating with Dr. Sui and Dr. Yang at Stoneville, Mississippi, USDA, on sensing of crop properties for irrigation management. Some research progress that has been made over the life of the China MOST protocol includes developing the annual report on water footprint for food production and virtual water movement in China, which has been published since 2010, and ARIS played a role in helping the Chinese develop some of the remote sensing tools that are used in that. I saw a very interesting, and you can see it in the picture on the upper right, solar-powered lateral move irrigation system completely developed at Northwest Ag and Forest University by the students there. I am continually amazed at the quality of engineering and science that is going on in universities in China. And this is very heartening, and it also allows for a very even playing field and a lot of cross-talk and a lot of sharing of knowledge and technologies between the U.S. and China. So this is a very good situation for all of us to be in. UAV sensing, here's some examples of using NDVI to map crops. And in the lower right there you see a map of what's growing in what fields using UAVs. And the UAVs, the vehicles themselves, are designed and manufactured in China. In fact, if you go down and you buy a hexacopter today in the U.S., it was probably manufactured in China. So a lot of this technology is being developed there and being used now in the U.S. and around the world. Now, moving over a little bit to water resources research in ARS, I want to talk a little bit about how we're seeing that these days. We have a real genetics by environment by management focus on developing solutions to water resources problems in the U.S. In our water program, we have four overlapping problem areas. including effective water management, which is all about irrigation and drainage management, and about use of alternative waters for irrigation. We have an erosion, sedimentation, and water quality protection program. We have a program on conservation effects assessment, the SEEP program, and we have a program on watershed management to improve ecosystem services in agriculture. In all of these programs, we have really strong partnerships with Chinese scientists through this protocol, the USDA-China-MOST protocol, and both the Water Saving Technologies flagship project that I'm involved in and others. Our research vision is based on some realities, as all research vision should be based. We have drought, climate variability, and climate change. We have in the Midwest U.S., in five states over the past 11 years, some $5.9 billion in insurance payments, and almost exactly half of those are for flooding, and the other half are for drought. That means we have a system on the land that isn't adequately dealing with climate variability. And we need to have research that addresses that and improves those systems and reduces both the drought loss and the flooding loss. And we can do that, but we need to focus and recognize the problem. We have a very rapid increase in farmland values and income, and this is happening all over the world. People are snapping up cheap land wherever they can find it, and that's driving the prices up. The value of agricultural commodities, even though the price for corn right now is pretty low, the overall value of agricultural commodities is rising rapidly. We have a rapid change in where irrigation is happening, not just in the U.S., but everywhere. And a rapid increase in drained area. In this country alone, there's 120 million acres of drained lands today versus about 80 million 30 years ago, and that's increasing at 100,000 acres a year. It's not stopping. When we do that, we short-circuit the path of water and residence time in the soil and allow it to go rapidly out to waterways, carrying whatever nutrients it has in it. So we need to learn how to manage drainage systems. We need them to increase productivity, but we need to learn how to manage them. We have aquifer declines all over the U.S. and in China, there are serious aquifer declines. How do we deal with the need, crop water needs, and avoid aquifer declines? How do we increase the efficiency of water use in agriculture? And we have hypoxia and harmful algae blooms. In several places in the U.S., in fact, all over the U.S., they've been documented in every state in the U.S., but this is also a problem in China as well. As we apply more nitrogen, more phosphorus, as we use more fertilizers in agricultural production, these problems are cropping up because we haven't yet learned how to manage. And this is an example of the increase in product and crop and livestock sales in the U.S. Our movement of irrigation is from drier to wetter climates, which means that we're irrigating where it can get quite wet, which means that we have a wet soil, and when it rains, it pushes water through the soil or we get excess runoff. But it's still important to irrigate because we have short-term summer droughts now that really reduce yield. In the eastern U.S., for instance, rain-fed agriculture produces, on average, only 50% of the potential yield. When we irrigate in the eastern U.S., we increase that potential, that actual yield, to 80% of potential yield. That's economic, and that is why irrigation is increasing in the eastern U.S., because of that economic gain of applying the irrigation. It's not going to stop. You know, we can't just say, well, stop it. It's not going to stop. It's economics. This is what's happening in the U.S. Irrigation is declining in the West, and it's increasing over the last 20 years at almost exactly the same rate in the eastern U.S. Now, I want to end with just a few examples of the sorts of research that are overarching and that build on a whole lot of technologies to give us some answers to problems in agriculture and water resource use. This is a mapping exercise that fuses data from four different satellites, some of which pass over a spot in the Earth daily, some of which, like Landsat, come by every 16 days, that have different pixel sizes of what they sense. And the genius here is taking all of these data, fusing them together, and coming up with what you see on the right, which are daily estimates of crop phenology changes, of evapotranspiration, a host of other things, surface temperature, drought, whatever. On the left, what you see is Napa Valley in California. That is seasonal water use, but the seasonal water use was calculated on the daily water use it was predicted in the Napa Valley, and this is being used now in the wine industry. And also, those really dark green fields you see there are alfalfa, so by the alfalfa growers as well. We're inventing technologies and getting them out through technology transfer through private companies. And here's some examples of four different soil water sensors in the lower left. In the middle picture there, the blue picture, that's a wireless infrared thermometer that came out last year. Developed through this technology. These are being used in the right and variable rate irrigation control so that we know how much water to put on, where to put it on, and when to put it on in the field. We have scientists that are studying root traits and crop water use efficiency. The question is, why does maize have four times the water use efficiency as sunflower under irrigation? Corn is usually poo-pawed as a high water-using crop, but what we ignore is the fact that for the water that we put on, we get a great deal of yield. The water use efficiency, the productivity per unit of water, is very high with corn. So what are the differences in root morphology and root dynamics over the season that allow this to happen, allow this efficient water use? So this kind of research is critical to understanding how to better breed crops. We're also looking at using alternative waters, particularly in California. We have a lot of drainage waters that are high in salts, selenium, and boron. Well, we're discovering that there are crops that we can grow, like mustard, brassica, like poplar, which both lowers the water table and provides a biofuel or even a wood for furniture production. Poplar is very good wood for furniture production if you grow it to size. And on the right, we see some production functions versus salinity in reference ET for different crops, in this case, corn. So these studies are all teaching us how to use degraded waters or alternative water supplies for efficient crop production. By the way, this mustard that's grown with selenium-rich drainage waters is now sold in parts of the world that have selenium deficiencies as a selenium-enriched food product, so it has great value. It's not just something to do with water that we wouldn't otherwise be able to use. And here's one that has caught my eye, demonstrating the feasibility of rice production using center pivot irrigation. We've demonstrated now in Arkansas, which is one of our major rice production centers in the U.S., that we can grow rice and attain 20 ton per acre yields, which are about, that's the high yield plateau in the U.S., and we can do it with center pivot irrigation and use about half the water we would use if we flooded those fields. So we can save a lot of water in rice production, and these are technologies that we're sharing with our Chinese colleagues. We may begin to see some of this sort of thing happen in China. So I probably used up my 20 minutes, but if there's time for any questions, Grandpa here would be glad to answer them. Thank you, Gary. Please do approach me afterwards or at any time, if you have some ideas about next year's meeting, I'd love to hear them. Gary, we waited too long. Now we've got a rabble rouser here who's going to ask a question.
I have a question about the flag story you mentioned. What's your thought? What's your insight about that?
Zero. I have zero insight. A large part, now you're making me admit my ignorance, because a large part of what I presented here I have been involved in, and an equally large part I have not been involved in. I'm reporting what's been reported in joint session with my Chinese colleagues, so I'm sorry I cannot respond. But do you have anything to say about that? Okay. Well,
I'm glad you met.
Sorry. But I am passing along some information that was given to me by my Chinese colleague.